are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Thursday, September 8th, 2016. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Commander-in-Chief Forum, a total crap show. If there's anyone you don't want to be today, it's Matt Lauer. Also on the pro, we'll do a complete rundown of last night, so you won't have to watch in the past. Also, Democrats release Colin Powell's letter. He lied quite a bit. I mean, he's lied before that, but sheds new light on Clinton's email practices, which are apparently the most important thing in the world. Democrats are fretting the Senate. Meanwhile, the Freedom Caucus, feeling their oats, will still try and keep this family friendly, folks. Mike Pence breaks with Donald Trump, says Obama, born in America. And what is Aleppo? Gary Johnson's epitaph. That's what they'll put on his gravestone, folks. I thought it was an acronym. All that and more on today's program. We're just going to go down, run through the forum last night. This is important stuff. I think ultimately what's going to come out of this in terms of the most important thing is going to be how it frames the next three debates, frankly. And in many respects, in that way, it's encouraging. Let me just the level of critique, the breadth, the depth, the scope of the critique of Matt Lauer's performance last night, as he wasn't really a moderator. I mean, this is where I think he ran into some problem. He was actually having to do interviews with these political candidates and seemingly, well, you don't need my word for it. Let me read from the New York Times TV critic. Just a couple of pieces. In an event aboard the decommissioned aircraft carrier Intrepid, the Today, Matt Lauer is the host of the Today Show, the Today host was lost at sea, seemingly unprepared on a military and foreign policy specifics. He performed like a soldier sent on a mission without ammunition, beginning with a disorganized offensive, ending in a humiliating retreat. I don't know if this Times critic had all of these sort of analogies just waiting for the proper moment. But he, later in the piece, he writes, in general, though, Mr. Lauer's questioning of Mr. Trump was like watching one student quiz another to prep for a test neither had done the reading for. The host asked soft, open-ended questions that invited the candidate to answer with word clouds. This is, oh, boy. Let's listen to the sound. And these, you know, this is across the spectrum, honestly. I don't think I have seen such near unanimous condemnation of a moderator. I mean, the only thing I could think is that, like, Kelly Ripa feels she just moved up a notch on the scale of hard-hitting journalists. Here is CNN, Dylan Byers and Brian Stetler commenting on Matt Lauer's forum performance.
I saw the journalistic challenge of this decade. Interviewing Donald Trump and challenging him when he is wrong is the journalistic challenge of our time. Hillary Clinton is a challenge as well, but Trump is a unique challenge, and Lauer did not step up to that challenge last night.
Dylan, why is everybody hating on Matt Lauer this morning, since it's on social media and all of the criticism? What did he do wrong?
Well, look, you know, political interviews, forums, town halls, debates, these are really big, significant deals. They're especially big, significant deals given all that's at stake in the 2016 election. You don't send Matt Lauer to do a political reporter's job. Look, in a debate, it might be fair to argue that you can let the two candidates fact check each other. But when it comes to these one-on-one interviews, these forums, you have to step up and play that role. That onus is on you. And Matt Lauer didn't do that. He certainly didn't do that with Donald Trump. He didn't do it on the Iraq War. He didn't do it on a number of other issues. And frankly, this criticism that he went a lot harder on Hillary Clinton than Donald Trump, I think, is well-founded.
I would add that the live television is really hard. I would add that caveat. The other caveat I would add is, if the candidates had allowed more time, if they had been willing to sit on that stage longer, we could have heard more, and we could have heard more fact-checking. But, you know, I agree with the frustration that I think so many viewers at home felt during the debate, during the discussion, that there wasn't more follow-up from Lauer. Yes, there were time constraints, but if he had dug deeper on specific questions, we might have come away knowing more about the candidates.
Yes, and if the candidates had more time, and if I had wings, I'd be flying around the office right now. I'd probably come up with a wireless microphone, and I'd be flying around just because I'd be so psyched to be able to fly.
If Matt Lauer was a professional on a different medium.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, I know live television's hard. He does it every day. The hard part is actually interviewing politicians about politics and policy when you don't really pay that much attention to it. Right. I mean, it's not like the stakes aren't very high. Unbelievable. Here is MSNBC's following up. Now, there's obviously it's a little bit difficult for folks on MSNBC to discuss this because Matt Lauer is their colleague. He is in the NBC family. And so it makes it a little bit sticky for them, and it creates interesting moments like the one we're going to see here. Now, this audio, what they've just come out of is they're playing the video that Donald Trump made, apparently himself, I mean, on his website. And this is probably, he had a notion, I may run for president. And he said, we should just go in there into Libya, take the guy out, talking about Gaddafi. So when, during the forum, Trump says, I was against going into Libya, and I was against going into Iraq, even though Clinton started off by saying, Donald Trump is on record, literally on a record, like an audio record of saying, yeah, we should go into Iraq, when he was on the Howard Stern show. Matt Lauer did not question Trump when he said the exact opposite. And look, you know, these things exist. We can argue about a myriad of other things, but these are facts. And so they play that Libya clip. They come back. And here is Lawrence O'Donnell saying, like, the guy just flat out lied. And Chris Matthews tries to mitigate the damage to Matt Lauer.
Chris Matthews, how do you debate a presidential candidate who took the position we absolutely should go into Libya, go in hard, and now says he never did? No one's had to really deal with that in the presidential
debate.
Well,
you have to call the guy a liar when you do that. That's the problem. That's a difficult thing for a Matt Lauer to do because it sounds like an opinion. And you're not supposed to have an opinion in this business. But look.
I don't think that's an opinion. Not when the facts are that black and white. I mean, there's video record. There's audio record of this. Matt Lauer getting dinged for a lot of different reasons. And what I haven't heard him getting dinged for is the guy starts off with a deal, right? And he says this to both people. Says it to both Clinton and to Trump. Now, we don't have this at the end. I'm not going to play this right now. Well, I guess we might as well. I mean, he says it to Clinton and to Trump. And so he gets on Clinton for mentioning Trump once, first time. Here's Lauer telling you this to Trump. No personal attacks during the forum.
Thank you very much for joining us. You heard Thank me you. Say to Mrs. Clinton, Secretary Clinton, and it didn't completely work out toward the end there. As much as possible, I'd like you to tell our veterans and our people at home why you are prepared for the role of commander-in-chief and try to keep the attacks to a minimum. We've had a year of that and maybe 60 more days of it.
To a minimum, absolutely.
Okay, perfect. To a minimum. I guess that's a question of definition.
Yeah. If the definition is not really to a minimum at all, then I think they were successful. I mean, just off my notes, and I know I didn't even start keeping track of this until later, but I have him about 41 minutes into, right after the Putin stuff, slamming Clinton at 41:30, slamming Clinton at 42:46. Slamming Clinton at 49:05. Slamming Clinton at 50 minutes in. And I didn't even start doing that until three quarters of the way through because I realized, like, wait a second. Lauer could not sustain that in the face of someone so masculine and powerful in front of him. I mean, honestly, I mean, think for a moment. Imagine it was Kelly Ripa or some other entertainment reporter who was given Matt Lauer's job. Who does the Today Show with Matt Lauer? Isn't there someone else? I don't know. I never watched that show. Can you imagine? Well, first of all, you can't, because they would never do that if it was a woman. Just by virtue of him being a man, I guess. They felt he was qualified. Could they really not find anybody at NBC? Carson Daly, maybe?
Jimmy Fallon.
Jimmy Fallon could have come in.
No, Carson Daly's on the Today Show. Al Roker, Carson Daly.
I mean, Roker.
Kathy Lee and Hoda. That would have been interesting.
Let me just say, too, that you really, if you're going to run for, if you're going to interview people who are running for president, you should pay attention to the news. If you're going to run for president, you should also pay attention to the news. Or you can get into very uncomfortable situations. We'll get back to the forum in a moment, but this morning on Morning Joe, Gary Johnson was on the program. And I guess you could argue, like, he's non-interventionist. So he doesn't really have to know what's going on anywhere else. Look, I've said this before. I've been on MSNBC a couple of times with Gary Johnson. I think this is back in 2011. Nice guy. Never struck me as the sharpest tack in the drawer. But here he's asked, and the reason why Mike Barnicle, and I have no, look, I'm not a fan of Mike Barnicle's either. The reason why he's asked by Mike Barnicle this question is because there's an incredibly difficult situation in Syria. 300,000 people approximately have died at this point. 4 million people, probably refugees, some internal. Now, the majority of those, I think, external refugees. Assad is obviously someone who is capable of killing thousands, tens of thousands of his people. Willing in certain circumstances, I think there's a decent amount of evidence to use some form of chemical weapons on his own people. The rebel forces, to the extent that they have ever been a fighting force, are primarily Islamic extremists of varying degrees and stripes. So it's an intractable situation in many respects. My opinion has been for years that, look, there are some times where there's just not much we can do, at least not militarily. But you ask, people would challenge, like, what about what's going on in the country? Justify that opinion that there's not much we can do militarily. And that's what Mike Barnicle is doing here when he asks Gary Johnson this question.
That category.
What would you do if you were elected about Aleppo?
About?
Aleppo.
And what is Aleppo?
You're kidding.
No.
Aleppo is in Syria. It's the epicenter of the refugee crisis.
Okay, got it. Got it.
Okay.
Well, with regard to Syria, I do think that it's a mess. I think that the only way we deal with Syria is to join hands with Russia to diplomatically bring that at an end. But when we've aligned ourselves with, when we've supported the opposition, the Free Syrian Army, is also coupled with the Islamists, and then the fact that we're also supporting the Kurds, and this is it's just a mess, and that this is the result of regime change that we end up supporting, and inevitably these regime changes have led to a less safe world.
So yeah. An alliance with Russia is the solution to Syria. Do you think Vladimir Putin and Russia?
Okay, all right, we don't need any more of that. I mean, his assessment of Syria is more or less correct. But honestly, you don't know what Aleppo is? Later, he said, well, he thought it was an acronym for something. And even when he was recovering, he didn't seem to know about Aleppo. I mean, it's one thing to like, I had a brain fart. Aleppo. I was thinking of something else, of a leopard. Or I was thinking of some other acronym.
Is that who makes EpiPens?
And when you get to that point where he's like, oh, okay, oh, yeah, oh, no, Syria. Here's the problem in Syria. And then he gave a fairly Wikipedian answer. But I think that even if you, like, you'd probably, I haven't checked the Wikipedia page, but I would imagine if you went to Wikipedia right now and looked under Syrian Civil War, Aleppo would be probably pretty high in that Wikipedia entry. I mean, it's been under siege for years now. And we can take arms, we can hold hands with the Russians, but right now the Russians and some Iranian forces, along with Syrian forces, are pounding the hell out of that city. And it's true, there are the forces there are, at the very least, you know, in part, fundamentalists that whose regime we may also not like. But I got to think you would read that far down into the Wikipedia. Is it on the Wikipedia page?
It's in the third paragraph, and it's mentioned 98 times.
Well, okay. But it is, to be fair, it is in the third paragraph. Do you get to Raqqa at all? Or is that like, is that fourth paragraph? That's pretty bad. And what is Aleppo? Can we play that part again? I love the fact that his first response also is to go immediately to the Donald Trump response. It's a mess. It's true.
What would you do if you were elected about Aleppo?
About?
Aleppo.
And what is Aleppo?
You're kidding.
No.
Aleppo is in Syria.
Mm. It's. That's when Gary Johnson's 19-year-old chief aide goes, oish.
Raqqa's pretty far down.
Okay. Wow. Hard-hitting question. Now, look, to be honest with you, I'm not terribly convinced that Mike Barnicle knows that much about Aleppo either, but that's not the point. He's not running for president.
Do you think there's any possibility that they, like, he could have asked, what would you do about Syria? But that they asked, what about Aleppo specifically, because he knew that there might be, or is it, I guess, assuming too much to think Gary Johnson wouldn't know what Aleppo is?
It's not inconceivable. I mean, I would imagine it's a combination of Mike Barnicle wanting to seem like he's steeped in the topic. It's conceivable that I don't think Barnicle thought that he was going to stump him. I think the idea is, I mean, the reason why you say Aleppo to someone who is non-interventionist is, are you going to let those people die? And, you know, it would have been the functional equivalent if you were having that debate about Libya, about, I think it was Benghazi, where Gaddafi had said, like, I'm going to kill everybody there. I'm going to kill all of you. And so Aleppo is that. In terms of the sort of, like, I don't know, the moral dilemma or the genuine dilemma, that is most representative of it. And that's why you would ask that question of Gary Johnson, who basically says, let's keep it at arm's length. And I mean, that's, I feel like that's exactly the question I would expect someone to ask me, because that's, I have a very similar perspective on it. And it's a little bit disturbing that you don't have that level of knowledge. I mean, because this isn't a new thing, right? I mean, this has been around. This has been a question. I mean, maybe even specifically Aleppo, but broadly speaking, this has been a question of debate for 5 years. Like, what do you do about the slaughter that is going on there? And, yeah, I mean, look. That's the one of the better things about, theoretically, about libertarianism. You're largely, it's just like, let it take care of itself. And so I can disengage and come up with some disruptive technology that's going to change the way that we get food deliveries.
Would Trump have a great answer on Aleppo, or would he just
start?
Yeah,
of course. It's a mess.
Right. And that's what I was going to say.
Oh, Aleppo's. No, in fact, this is how it would start off. What is Aleppo? It's important. It's super important. I think about Aleppo all the time.
Well, exactly.
But what would I do? I would do a bunch of different things. I would do the right thing. I would win. I would win in Aleppo.
Yeah. So that's what I'm saying. You know, when you say Gary Johnson's running for president, that's a little bit true. I mean, he's running for president. But Donald Trump might become president.
It assumes. Right. And we're assuming.
And he knows actually nothing about anything, including what words mean. He just hides it better.
All right. Well, let's go into, I think you're absolutely right about that. And, you know, when Kelly Ripa moderates the next the next debate, maybe she'll ask him that. All right, so the forum starts off where Matt Lauer. Now, understand, there was less than each candidate had less than 30 minutes. I think it was probably close to 24 minutes, right? Where. Yeah, maybe it was about 24 minutes, I would say.
About 25, 26.
24, 25 minutes each candidate had. So Lauer was under the gun a little bit. He starts off by asking Hillary Clinton, what's the important thing, the most important thing that a president, an attribute that a president have? And she, of course, says, which we could all anticipate, right? Steadiness and judgment and experience. And he uses that. And you could see this is the most thought he gave into anything to launch into the questions of emails. In fact, let's start it. This is question number two. The second question he asks. And the first one has just been one. There's a clever way of doing it for him. It was the only clever thing he did. And I suspect maybe that's why I didn't know about any of the other stuff, because he spent all his time figuring out how he could do this. So this is question number two.
The word judgment has been used a lot around you, Secretary Clinton, mm-hmm. over the last year and a half, and in particular concerning your use of your personal email mm-hmm. and server to communicate while you were Secretary of State. You've said it's a mistake. Mm-hmm. You said you made not the best choice. Mm-hmm. You were communicating on highly sensitive topics. Why wasn't it more than a mistake? Why wasn't it disqualifying if you want to be commander-in-chief?
Well, Matt, first of all, as I have said repeatedly, it was a mistake to have a personal account. I would certainly not do it again. I make no excuses for it. It was something that should not have been done. But the real question is the handling of classified material, which is, I think, what the implication of your question was. And for all the viewers watching you tonight, I have a lot of experience dealing with classified material, starting when I was on the Senate Armed Services Committee, going into the 4 years of Secretary of State. Classified material has a header which says top secret, secret, confidential. Nothing. And I will repeat this, and this is verified in the report by the Department of Justice. None of the emails sent or received by me had such a header.
Worse.
Okay. So, and he starts off by highly sensitive material, right? Then the second question, or the third question, was also about the email. Then the fourth question was also about the email. In fact, the email questions, which were then followed by another email question by the audience, took up almost 10 minutes out of the 25 minutes. And not 10 minutes buried in the middle, the first 10 minutes, the most important issue were the email. Despite the fact that the FBI declined to bring any charges, despite the fact that no one could point to one instance where that information provided detrimental to national security, that becomes the most important issue. So, I mean, it was pretty pathetic. We had to wait until 12 minutes in, till halfway through, when we get a question about her hawkishness, which is, I think, a very legitimate topic to ask. Here's that question from a self-identified progressive vet.
Clinton, she's a Democrat, and she has this question for you.
Thank you.
Secretary Clinton, to your point, you have had an extensive record with military intervention. How do you respond to progressives like myself who worry and have concerns that your hawkish foreign policy will continue? And what is your plan to end wasteful war campaigns in which our peers, servicewomen and men, continue to be killed and wounded?
Well, I assume you're talking about Iraq because of my vote. And you probably are talking about Libya because of the role that I played in the administration's decision about whether to take on Gaddafi. But before I get to that, let me say very clearly, I view force as a last resort, not a first choice. I will do everything in my power to make sure that our men and women in the military are fully prepared for any challenge that they may have to face on our behalf. But I will also be as careful as I can in making the most significant decisions any president and commander in chief can make about sending our men and women into harm's way. With respect to Libya, again, there's no difference between my opponent and myself. He's on record extensively supporting intervention in Libya when Gaddafi was threatening to massacre his population. I put together a coalition that included NATO, included the Arab League, and we were able to save lives. We did not lose a single American in that action. And I think taking that action was the right decision. Not taking it and permitting there to be an ongoing civil war in Libya would have been as dangerous and threatening as what we are now seeing in Syria.
All right. Well, and I should say, I supported the Libyan intervention, but as limited by the mandate from the UN, which was not regime change. And that's the issue, it seems to me. Some people argue that without regime change, you could not have prevented Gaddafi from attacking Benghazi and carrying out what he claimed he was going to do. I don't know that I know enough about the military situation to know if that is true in retrospect. My sense is that's not true. And it's hard to imagine that going in and engaging in regime change in Libya was the last option on the table. Seems to me leaving Gaddafi in power and basically making him have no air force was also another option. Keeping him from moving his troops close to that city, another option. I would also add that it doesn't seem like Libya is anything other than a crap show right now anyways. I don't know that as many people are dying. Perhaps she's right on that regard. But, I mean, these are legitimate questions that should be asked in a forum like this. Where I think she was stronger was on the Iran deal. And here's the thing about the Iran deal that the American public seems woefully undereducated about, and that is a function, it seems to me, of the press. The deal that was struck with Iran was specifically about nuclear proliferation and was never, never about anything else. In fact, that was by design. Let's deal with the most important issue first. Putting everything else aside, Iran's support of terrorism, Iran's meddling in Syria, whatever it is, we put that aside. We deal specifically with nukes. Matt Lauer doesn't get that. And I don't think the American public does either, frankly. But let's hear Clinton's explanation of the Iran deal, which I thought was pretty good.
Question. Let me ask you about the Iran nuclear deal. It was signed under Secretary Kerry. It was begun under you. You right. started those talks. You have said you expect the Iranians to cheat. You think they'll buy time and perhaps stay along their course to building a nuclear weapon. If they cheat, Secretary Clinton, will you have any course of action other than a military course of action? Would you enter into negotiations with them again? Would you go back to economic sanctions knowing they cheated and are then closer to a nuclear weapon?
Matt, look, let me put this in context because this is one of the most important strategic questions we face. When I became Secretary of State, the Iranians were on a fast track to acquiring the material necessary to get a nuclear weapon. That had happened the prior 8 years. They mastered the nuclear fuel cycle. They built covert facilities. They stocked them with centrifuges, and they were moving forward. What was our decision? Our decision was to try to put together an international coalition that included Russia and China to exert the kind of pressure through sanctions that the United States alone could not do.
Right, but you so said wait, that you let me think you're going to cheat.
This is an important issue. I know we're on TV. We don't have a lot of time.
I want to get to a lot of questions.
I will talk quickly. But I want people to understand
I spent
this.
Eight questions asking the same thing about emails.
I put together the coalition. We imposed the sanctions. We got them to the negotiating table. And after I left, we got the agreement. That agreement put a lid on their nuclear weapons program and imposed intrusive inspections. I have said we are going to enforce it to the
Do you
letter.
Think they're playing us?
On the nuclear issue, no. I think we have enough insight into what they're doing to be able to say we have to distrust but verify. What I am focused on is all the other malicious activities of the Iranians. Ballistic missiles, support for terrorists, being involved in Syria, Yemen, and other places, supporting Hezbollah, Hamas. But here's the difference, Matt. I would rather, as president, be dealing with Iran on all of those issues without having to worry as much about their racing for a nuclear weapon. So we have made the world safer. We just have to make sure it's enforced.
Hallie.
Okay. You know, what's amazing here is that you see how Matt Lauer pretends like he knows what he's talking about. Like, are they playing us? Like, let me use like some schoolyard parlance to make it seem like I've got my arms really wrapped tight around this. Are they playing us? Are they doing the old razzmatazz with us? Moron. But I thought you did very well there. I mean, like you could actually learn something from that answer. Now, that's problematic in the context of a presidential election. Then there was a question about the VA. I have not ever, and maybe folks listening have, but I have never heard a vet who has been critical of the VA ever say anything but, oh, we should definitely keep the system as is. We need to improve it. But the VA at large is a great system. I mean, I've never heard, I'm sure there are vets who have a problem, and certainly people have had individual experiences that are problematic. But I've never heard anybody who's out there arguing for enhancing the system to actually have it changed or privatized, like Trump ultimately does. When he gets questioned. But here is Clinton on the VA.
I'm with Kenneth Anderson. He's one of our undecided voters here. He considers himself an independent. He earned the rank of sergeant in the Marine Corps, where he was an Arabic translator during three tours in Iraq. Kenneth, you have a question for Secretary Clinton.
Yes, Secretary Clinton, last October you said that surveys of veterans showed that they're overall satisfied with their treatment and that the problems with the VA aren't as widespread as they're made out to be. So do you think the problems with the VA have been made to seem worse than they really are?
Look, I was outraged by the stories that came out about the VA, and I have been very clear about the necessity for doing whatever is required to move the VA into the 21st century, to provide the kind of treatment options that our veterans today desperately need and deserve. And that's what I will do as president. But I will not let the VA be privatized. And I do think there is an agenda out there supported by my opponent to do just that. I think that would be very disastrous for our military veterans. So I'm going to do everything I can. I'm going to have a meeting every week in the Oval Office. We're going to bring the VA people. We're going to bring the DOD people, because we've got to have a better fit between getting mustered out and getting into the VA system. Sometimes, and you probably know this, Sergeant, I've met so many vets who get mustered out, who leave the service. They can't find their records from DOD. And those records never make it to the VA. They feel like they're living in a fun house. They have to go over the same things over and over. We're living in a technological world. You cannot tell me we can't do a better job getting that information. And so I'm going to focus on this. I'm going to work with everybody. I'm going to make them work together.
And I'm going to
and we're going to fix the problems in the VA.
Sergeant, thank you.
There you go. I think that's a good answer. There's, you know, technological problems. I've been trying to get a prescription filled for sleeping pills for like a week. My stupid, yeah, they can't do it. My doctor says, well, I put them in the system. And then the pharmacy says they can't get it done. You try and go to a small pharmacy, right? So you don't go, and I know, you get screwed. All right, let's move on to the Trump section. This is where things really become ridiculous. Here is Trump talking about whether or not he regrets inflammatory things. Like, I mean, all the questions, and look, I think I set this up this way yesterday, right? I said, if Matt Lauer makes it all about like personality stuff, then we're going to get this. And I will say this. We'll go a little bit long and then we'll go into the fun half. I will say this. The way that Matt Lauer is getting shredded. I mean, the guy's getting shredded in a way that I've never seen. You know, Jim Lehrer got some grief for his moderating. I think it was in 2012. I think it was. Maybe I can't remember. The way that Matt Lauer is getting shredded, I think we're going to see the best. We're going to see some of the best moderating from people going forward that we could possibly see. You know, Lester Holt right now has called a special meeting for his staff. And he said, everybody is going to be working around the clock. You're going to inject me with every single thing that Trump has ever said. And so I think ultimately this failure by Lauer is actually going to be a very good thing. I don't think this forum will have done much. It may shore up, help Trump a little bit. But I don't think it's going to do much other than set the stage for a problem that Trump's going to have later, frankly. But here he is. Lauer asked him about the inflammatory things you said. Any chance you'll knock that off? It's a tough question. And Trump then says something absolutely bizarre about his trip to Mexico.
Talk about you and Commander-in-Chief and not just Secretary Clinton, but some of your Republican opponents in the primary season, and they wonder about your temperament. And they say, does Donald Trump have the temperament to be Commander-in-Chief? You said something recently that I found interesting. You admitted that sometimes in the heat of a debate or when you're talking about a lot of issues, you say things that you later regret. So can we afford that with a commander-in-chief, to have a commander-in-chief who says things that he later regrets?
Pause it. Well, when you say- Pause it. What's he going to say? The suspense is killing me. Do you think Trump is going to say, yeah, I'll be okay? Or do you think he'd say, no, we can't. You're right. I'm going to resign now. I'm going to quit the race. Honestly, it's like, it's as if Matt Lauer saying, like, do you think you're good? Do you think you're good? Do you think you're good or do you think you're great?
Regrets?
Well, when you say regret, yeah, sure, I regret. But in the meantime, I beat 16 people and here I am. So, you know, to a certain extent, there is a regret. I would have liked to have done it in a nicer manner. But I had 16 very talented people that I had to go through, and that was a lot of people.
But when you say
that was a record, Matt, that was a record in the history of Republican politics. I was able to get more votes than anybody ever has gotten in the history of Republican
politics. But when you say inflammatory things in a presidential campaign, it's different than saying them when you're commander-in-chief. If you say things you regret when you're commander-in-chief, you can spark a conflict, you can destabilize a region, you can put American lives at risk. Can we afford to take that risk with you?
Well, I think absolutely. I think if you saw what happened in Mexico the other day, where I went there, had great relationships, everything else, I let them know where the United States stands. I mean, we've been badly hurt by Mexico, both on the border and with taking all of our jobs or a big percentage of our jobs. And if you look at what happened, look at the aftermath today, where the people that arranged the trip in Mexico have been forced out of government.
Back in August.
Okay, now, you'll notice that after Trump says, as a measure of how well I did on this quasi-diplomatic mission, the people who set it up were forced out of government. That's how well we did. And Matt Lauer's response is to move on to the next question, as opposed to say, wait, what? Do you think you're going to get invited back to a country if success for you is the firing of close aides to the head of the government in the wake of your visit? This is one of the most bizarre things I've ever heard. And the idea that Matt Lauer didn't go like Matt Lauer asked a question, the premise of which was basically delivered back to him by Trump at the end of that question. Can we afford someone whose idea about diplomatic relations are so tenuous that they're dangerous? Blah, 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 blah. Look, I got people fired from another country. That's success. Wait, what? But no, he had to move on to another question about, do you feel like you're terrific or not so terrific? Honestly, that is one of the most bizarre.
The fact slide that Trump says they're taking all of and then corrects it to most of our jobs.
Right. Which at this point is not true at all. But it's just, it was an incredibly strange. And you know, the sensibility of these journalists who are like, I mean, that's all you needed. If you are so worried about the way you're comporting yourself as a journalist, all you need to do is listen. I didn't get to the other question about whether or not you think that you're great or not. All right. Here is Trump talking about his plan and what he would do to stabilize the country. Like, you know, presumably, like, what would you have done that was better than Obama? Like, how would you deal with this? And Trump doesn't get into all of it, but he does tease the fact that he has a special weapon that I think I saw in some, I think it was a, I can't remember if it was a Superman movie or what, where Trump has the ability to suck all the oil out of the ground, I guess presumably from a spaceship, and then store it into a floating tanker without the cooperation of the people on the ground. So here it is. This is number five. Oh, this is four then five.
In Anbar province in Iraq, he left the military with the rank of captain, service that inspired him to write a book. He's a Democrat, and he has this question for you, Mr. Trump.
Mr. Trump, over the past 15 years, a lot of U.S. troops have bled and died, securing towns and provinces from Iraq to Afghanistan, only to have insurgent groups like ISIS spring back the moment we leave. Now, you've claimed to have a secret plan to defeat ISIS, but you're hardly the first politician to promise a quick victory and a speedy homecoming. So, assuming we do defeat ISIS, what next? What is your plan for the region to ensure that a group like them doesn't just come back?
Sure, I mean, part of the problem that we've had is we go in, we defeat somebody, and then we don't know what we're doing after that. I mean, we lose it. Like, as an example, you look at Iraq, what happened, how badly that was handled. And then when President Obama took over, likewise, it was a disaster. It was actually somewhat stable. I don't think it could ever be very stable. It's a war we should have never gone into in the first place. But he came in, he said, when we go out, and he took everybody out. And really, ISIS was formed. This was a terrible decision, and frankly, we never...
I should tell you that that's not when ISIS was formed. ISIS was formed out of Al-Qaeda in Iraq, and which was formed out of the former Baathist military personnel. So, no, they weren't, they didn't just like all of a sudden just show up. They just rebranded. And, but let's not get quibbly here.
And really, ISIS was formed. This was a terrible decision. And frankly, we never even got a shot. And if you really look at the aftermath of Iraq, Iran is going to be taking over Iraq. They've been doing it, and it's not a pretty picture. And I think you know, and because you've been watching me, I think, for a long time, I've always said, shouldn't be there, but if we're going to get out, take the oil. If we would have taken the oil, you wouldn't have ISIS, because ISIS formed with the power and the wealth of that oil.
Okay, now, take the oil. We know who got the oil contracts, right? Western oil companies. The oil used to be something that was owned by the Iraqis. Now it was controlled by foreign entities. So I don't know how we would take the oil. I guess presumably like every military personnel there would empty their pockets and they'd get like a little, they would just walk up to the oil station and get some oil put into their pockets. And everybody, or they would just spray it all over them. When they get back to the military base, they squeegee it out. They just squeegee it out. But let's hear the next question as he sort of, you know, fleshes that idea out a little bit.
Of that oil.
How are we going to take the oil? How are we going to do that?
You would leave a certain group behind, and you would take various sections where they have the oil. They have... people don't know this about Iraq, but they have among the largest oil reserves in the world.
Pause it. I did know that about Iraq, actually. So wait a second. We leave a group of people there who take sections of Iraq, that have the oil. So in other words, you leave, I don't know how many soldiers he's talking about, to defend the sections of Iraq that have the oil from presumably all those pesky Iraqis who are like, hey, you've just stolen our entire country's wealth. Like, that's the way that we feed ourselves, is by selling that oil. We don't want you to take it. So you better send more of the group of people you're going to send over here if you think you're going to control this section of the country that has our wealth. Just back it up, because I want to hear this again, because this is sheer insanity. And anyone with a remotely passing interest in this question would say, what the F are you talking about?
Of that oil.
How are we going to take the oil? How are we going to do that?
You would leave a certain group behind, and you would take various sections where they have the oil. They have, people don't know this about Iraq, but they have among the largest oil reserves in the world, in the entire world. And we're the only ones. We go in, we spend $3 trillion, we lose thousands and thousands of lives. And then, Matt, what happens is we get nothing. You know, it used to be to the victor belong the spoils. Now, there was no victor there, believe me, there was no victor. But I always said, take the oil. One of the benefits we would have had if we took the oil is ISIS would not have been able to take oil and use that oil.
Let me stay on ISIS
to fuel themselves.
Let me stay on
that. Let me completely blow past what you just, that fantastical notion of we would just take the oil. I mean, again, how do you let that just sit there? We're just going to take a group. They're going to take and protect the section that has the oil. And then, as if like he's like, then ISIS would have no source of revenue.
Is there a chance that he's just not even listening to what Trump's saying? Like after
there
a certain
is
point,
every chance.
Like he's listened to his monitor?
Oh my, well, I don't know what his what he has. He has his questions in front of him. He's not listening to anything that Trump is saying. He doesn't understand what his job is. To just stop and say, wait a second. What group, how do they defend it? Well, we send a group there. You mean military persons? Yes, military person. How many? 10,000. You think 10,000 is going to protect all the oil from the militias, the Kurds, the Sunni tribes? Are in all of Iraq, they're just going to say, okay, you can stay here. I mean, no mention of the forces, status of forces agreement, which Bush signed, which the Iraqis said, we want you out. Because we can't stay in power if we allow you to be here. But they're going to be okay with you taking all the oil? You're going to put all those soldiers around the oil fields and just extract the oil. And the Iraqis are going to sit there and say, bye, there goes our oil. This is insane. It's insane that Matt Lauer just let that just fly by. There's no point in asking any of these questions if you don't provide just like, I mean, honestly, like have my daughter go and ask the questions. She can read them. She's far more charming, I think, than Matt Lauer. You'd get better ratings. You'd have an 11-year-old asking questions. What a great idea. The whole point of having theoretically a journalist there is so that they can actually do a follow-up, so they can actually listen to the words coming out of the mouth of the candidate and say, what you're saying doesn't make sense. Or you're going to have to flesh this out a little bit more. It's unbelievable. It really is unbelievable to me. Let's get to one more of these things, and then we'll do the rest in the fun half. No, we've gone long. Become a member today. Join themajorityreport.com. All right? So that... Become a member so that I don't get in trouble with the local staff here for going long in the fun half. Into the free half, which I promised I would do. Kelly's mad at me. So Lauer asks, I mean, the amazing thing is Lauer's asking these like incredibly softball questions and Trump still like provide like Lauer asks a softball question. Trump basically takes the bat he's swinging with and smacks himself in the face with it. And then Lauer says, hey, nice hit. So Lauer basically says, like, hey, you know, people are worried that you don't really have grasp on policy, as if I'm one to talk. Lauer doesn't say that part. What kind of homework are you doing? It's number 14. This is something else.
With you, Mr. Trump, tonight and Secretary Clinton are so complex that even career military people and career diplomats and politicians have trouble getting their arms around them.
Right.
You've had a very different background in business. So nobody would expect you to have taken over the last 20 years really deep dives into some of these issues. But I'm curious about what you're doing now. What kind of research are you doing now? What kind of homework are you doing? What kind of things are you reading as you prepare for the day in 2 months where you might be elected the next president of the United States?
Well, in the front row, you have four generals. You have admirals. We have people all throughout the audience that I'm dealing with. Right here is a list that was just printed today of 88 admirals and generals that I meet with and I talk to.
How much time are you spending on this?
A lot. And I'm doing a lot of different things. Don't forget, we're running a big campaign. We're doing very well. I'm also, you know, and I'm very much giving it to my children and my executives to run. I'm also partially running a business. I'm campaigning. I'm running a business. I've got a lot of hats right now. But we're doing very well. But in the meantime, I am studying, and I'm meeting constantly. You see General Flynn, and you see some of the folks that we have, and they're scattered throughout the audience. So we have admirals, we have generals, we have colonels, we have a lot of people that I respect. And I think I've learned a lot, but I really feel I have a common sense on the various issues that you're talking about.
Yeah. Let me just recap that. How are you studying? Well, somebody printed out a list of the people that I'm supposedly talking to. I can name one of them. Michael Flynn, he's right there. And then there's others. And I know all the various ranks that they might be. Can't name any of them personally. I've spent that much time with them. But in my own defense, how much time could you expect me to spend studying when I've not only got a campaign to run, I've also got a business to run? So, I mean, Matt, if you think all I'm doing is sitting around playing video games and that's why I'm not studying, that's not true. I've got a business to run. I can't dedicate full time to being president. Like, at that point, doesn't Matt Lauer go, wait a second, I'm sorry. How much time are you spending running your business? Like, at what point do you think this becomes important enough for you not to run your business? Like, we're 60 days out from the end of the campaign. Don't you think now is the time to, like, or do you think that you can just get fully up to speed on all these issues between November 7th and January 20th? Like, you don't need to put your business on ice for another 2 months just so that you can, like, understand what you mean when you say we're going to put a group that's going to get the sections of Iraq to take their oil. And then you could also learn the name of another general or colonel or admiral that is advising you. Pretty stunning failure by Lauer to, like, take even the most remedial of questions beyond the remedial question.
So I was just wondering what you think about this Matt Lauer himself aside, just kind of this whole thing being the larger problem right now with the press and their treatment of Hillary versus Trump writ small, you know? I mean, they, you know, Trump gets away with absolute ridiculous nonsense answers and, you know, being completely unfit for the job, and he keeps getting away with it. No matter how much the press reports on it, it doesn't stick.
No,
I
disagree.
Has the wait? Can I?
No, I know what you're saying. I mean, yeah, we've been talking about this. I mean, obviously, like he spends 12 minutes on the emails, and there's a lot more scrutiny on Clinton. I think this is sui generis, in so far as, like, look, there is no other opportunity that you have to have a forum like this, to sit down with Trump and ask him these questions in an unedited fashion, in a live broadcast where, you know, you've already asked Clinton. I think another reporter, a vast majority of those who would be even considered to this would have done a better job, or they're certainly going to do a better job now. There's no doubt about it.
Well, this is why I said Matt Lauer aside, because this commander-in-chief, whatever, sit down aside, what's been bothering me for the past at least month or so is the entire everything I read, you know, everything I see on TV. I mean, it's the same thing. Trump says nonsense. We laugh at it and criticize him for it, and it's absolute ridiculous emptiness. Emptiness, knowledge emptiness, and then on the other side you have Hillary, and it just keeps repeating. And the point of it all, and you know, you can hate Hillary, and she is incredibly problematic as you know as a candidate, but there's actually substance there, and all that happens is she gets attacked on it. So I'm asking you what you think the answer is, and it's
what's the question?
The question is what should the press do moving forward? I mean, you asked the other day, why do they keep having Katrina Pearson on? And it's like, you know, what is the answer to that?
I think the press, I mean, frankly, I think to a large extent, I think the press is confronting, you know, his spokespeople fairly well. I think, you know, there are some outlets that I think are trying to create, you know, that are more focused on the innuendo on some of the Clinton supposed scandals. But this I think, I don't think you can separate this from Matt Lauer. I mean, that's the point, is that I think like this was, there's only one of these. There's no other opportunity to do what he did. I mean, who else is getting an interview, a sit-down interview with Trump?
I get that, and that this could have gone better, but I guess I feel like the answers would have been the same, and the questions
No, I'm sorry. If there is a follow-up to any one of those three or four questions that we just done, a legitimate follow-up where someone's actually listening to the words he's saying, and he had to repeat that again, and then you ask again, and he repeats it again, then this stuff starts to resonate. Look, you can say there's two different issues here. One is, why do you spend over a third of the time on the emails? That's one problem that we have. But the other problem is that Matt Lauer was outmatched by Donald Trump in that situation. And a real journalist would not have been. It was a joke. It was a joke. Matt Lauer did not listen to any of the answers. He is not steeped in any of the issues that he was talking about. I mean, the idea that Matt Lauer is asking about national security things becomes even that much more of a joke. You know, he's a total empty suit. And I don't know if necessarily Lester Holt will necessarily be better, but, there's a lot of people who would have just been like, what are you talking about? Like, what are you talking about?
And I think we were talking about this before the show. Like, this is kind of like, it could be sort of dialectically positive in a way that everyone notices what happened to Lauer. It's almost like an antibiotic. Like, it's like rubbing your head in like dirt and feces to build up like antibodies or something like
this
that.
This is a prophylactic.
Thanks, guys.
What's that?
You were talking about dirt and feces before the show. Thanks for bringing it right on.
He didn't say dirt and feces before the show.
The New York Times guy got me into metaphor, metaphorical thinking.
All right, we got to take a break. We'll go into the fun half. We'll continue with this. 646-257-3920 is the number, 646-257-3920. If you want to comment in any fashion, we'll also take your IMs. Folks, don't forget, it is your membership that makes this show possible. Go to jointhemajorityreport.com. Jointhemajorityreport.com. Support the program. Get an extra bonus material on a daily basis. And also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. Visit our support our sponsors page. Get any one of the deals that through us. Also, if you buy crap from Amazon or Jet.com, go to MajorityReportKickback.com. Click on the link, bookmark it. Always buy your crap through there. We get a kickback. We'll be right back after this.